Blog Talk Radio.
It is April the 20th, 2010, and you are listening to the weekly financial roundup with the Optimistic Bear. This is the show where armchair economists rule the roost, where we talk about anything tangentially related to finance and the economy and what we think of it, what we think the future holds, and what all of this, the things that have been happening in the last week, mean to individuals and to the global economy as a whole. We don't pretend to be professionals or really know what we're talking about, but we have fun. And on that note, we always love to hear from our callers. So call in at any time. The number is area code 917-388-4810. We'd love to hear from you and share your thoughts and ideas of what you think about the economy. Tell us where the optimistic bear is going amiss in his views, and it makes the show always a lot more interesting. My regular callers, my regular guests, are still waiting for them to call in, but I will begin the special episode tonight, which is we're going to be focusing on Goldman Sachs. They've been in the news lately, and there's a whole lot to talk about the recent legal issues that Goldman Sachs is facing, one of the premier banking institutions, investment banking institutions in the United States and in the world, as they are facing more public and legal opprobrium these days. And we're going to talk about that tonight. What does it mean? Why is Goldman Sachs get in trouble and in the crosshairs of government prosecutors? And do they deserve it? And what does it mean for the long term? Is this just a blip that is going to disappear and we won't see much in the future? These are just some headlines for right now, but it really won't impact Goldman's future profitability. And just to give a little bit of thanks for calling in.
Oh, hi, Michael. Sorry, I just wanted to check and make sure I was in and you could hear me.
Thanks for calling in, Elliot. So we're, as I was telling our listeners, tonight we're going to be talking a lot about Goldman Sachs, and they've been in the news a lot lately, and I think it's kind of interesting to give a little historical perspective on Goldman Sachs. They've been around for a long time. I think they went into business back in the 1860s is when they first started. And they were actually, I think, listed in the stock exchange in the 1890s is when they first went on the New York Stock Exchange. So they've been around for a while. But when you start looking at their history as well, it's interesting to see how things kind of repeat in a way, because there's been a bunch of scandals that Goldman has been involved with over the years. I mean, there was one back in 1907 where there was helped some bond issues for some companies, and when there was a crash that occurred, there was a lot of public outrage and governmental investigation, and it turned out that the bonds had went to special dividends to shareholders in some of those companies, and so people weren't too pleased with that. And then in 1970, apparently, Goldman Sachs ran into some minefields with the Penn State Railroad, when it had come out that they had sold all of their holdings in the railway just before, prior to them declaring bankruptcy, and a lot of people were thinking that that smelled or stinked, and it was unfair that they were taking profiting and had unfair knowledge of what was going on. So it's, you go through all of that, and it's interesting to see, you know, there's similar types of complaints today. You know, another thing that I noticed, Elliot, in doing some of the research for the show tonight, is I was reading that there apparently has been some big, there was some titanic feud between the Goldman and Sachs families. But I hadn't been able to find out what exactly that was. And it seemed as if from like 1914 until the 1960s, the two families hardly talked to each other. And I wondered, like, what the heck was that all about?
Yeah, I have no idea. I don't know that much about the history of Goldman Sachs. I do know they had a pretty rough time, I think, after the Great Depression era, and they were basically fell out of the limelight for a long, long time, where they were, you know, barely cutting by in their business. And it's really just over the past 35 years or so that they sort of rose, you know, back up into this hugely you know, prominent player and everything, to where now they're basically, you know, the dominant player, I think, as far as investment banks go. So when people think of Wall Street, you know, they think of Goldman Sachs, which also is a big reason why I think they're getting so much attention from everybody.
Sure. I mean, your comment about their experience of the Great Depression is very pertinent. They almost went bust after the crash in 29, but one of their employees at the time, or I guess one of their managers, Sidney Weinberg, was very prescient and managed to unload all of the remaining stocks and equities that they held in the massive rally that occurred in 1930.
Right, at the top of that rally. You're right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He got
right.
out. So they certainly weren't smart enough to get out before the crash in 29, which hurt them grievously, but they did get out at lower price points when there was the rally in 1930, because Weinberg apparently saw the writing on the wall and was smart enough to realize that things weren't about to get back to normal. That said, apparently the company was on life support for about 16 years. Which speaks volumes about the cyclic nature of investment banking, right? I mean, you can be a company that's doing very well in investment banking, but when you go through the cycles in the economy, there can be long periods of time where you're wandering in a desert.
Yeah, I mean, Goldman is the great profit machine of this last mania, and I think, you know, after this is over, they're not going to be profitable for a long, long time, or at least nothing like what they were. I don't think it's going to be anything like what we've seen recently. I think the Great Depression is sort of a good example of that. I mean, we have so many forces working against them now. It's not just some of the things that we think may happen in terms of a deflationary spiral and that effect, but whether or not that does occur, we still have massive public sentiment against them. We have legislation going against them and general legislation, not just targeted at them, not just the lawsuits that are emerging, but I think we're going to see increased regulation in the financial markets and maybe even the transaction tax that they've been talking about. That is not that far-fetched. You know, they've been throwing it out there and it's been turned down. But, you know, if people get there's enough anger, I think, against Wall Street, we could see that definitely come into play in the future, which I think would destroy the investment banking industry pretty quickly. Or definitely not be a positive.
Sure. Well, it is fascinating to see that historically, every time Goldman has run into trouble and has had PR disasters in even legal issues, it always seems to be when there's a downturn. It never seems to happen when things are when the economy is doing well. It's like they get in trouble in 1970 after stocks had already turned down and Penn State went bust. They got in trouble. You know, in each of these times, it's almost like that's when. So, what's that all about? Why is it that is it that they get in trouble only when things are going poorly?
Right, because we've talked about this on previous shows about all kinds of fraud and illegal or bordering on illegal and certainly immoral behavior that all kinds of, and not just Goldman, but tons of investment houses and brokerages have done over the past decade. Like front running is one of the simplest ones that we've talked about. For those
which
who don't know what that is,
just for the benefit of our listeners, please describe front running.
It's basically like if I'm a big investor or maybe I'm a fund or something, I've got a lot of money and I want to buy a massive number of shares of something. Well, the purchase of that large number of shares is going to move the market because it's a lot of money. And so when they see an order like that coming in, well, they can front run you by putting in their own orders right before your order goes in. So they're basically buying it at a better price. Your order goes in, the price moves up, and then they immediately sell what they purchased. And what this does in effect is it actually just gives you a worse average price that you purchase the stock at. So in effect, it's just like a little tax on you whenever you buy something, they front run and grab it.
To be clear, that's not what Goldman Sachs is being charged with right now.
No,
but
that's
just
not
a commonly known abuse that has occurred in the financial industry.
Well, people are starting to complain about stuff like this, but the point I wanted to make is that this stuff happens all the time in bull markets, and nobody cares about it. You know, if you're making tons of money on the stocks you bought, and oh, by the way, you were front run and you lost a quarter of 1% of your profits, most people don't think about it. They don't care. But when a bear market rolls around and they lose money, and suddenly that quarter of the 1% they lost due to front running, they get all angry and pissed about, because, you know, when people lose money, they want to yell at someone and blame someone, and they get really angry, and it's just totally normal.
I think actually the whole Madoff affair is a great case in point. I was stunned to read that some of the investors in the Bernie Madoff hedge funds, which of course is now being discovered to be a complete Ponzi scheme with no actual real investment going on at all, that there were actual investors in his hedge funds that knew there was something wrong, because they were savvy enough investors, big, even large companies, large investment companies to some degree, who would see the trades that Bernie Madoff said he was doing, and they would do the math. Like they would try to walk through it all to see how this was working and how he was making money on it, and they knew it didn't add up. That the ways that Bernie said he was making money clearly wouldn't make the kind of money that they were getting in dividends and in profits from their investment with him.
There was a professor that did that research, I think, and I think it had less to do with the profit and more to do with the lack of volatility. It was something about the profits were too consistent, because in order to have large profits, you generally also have to have higher volatility. You can't really have low volatility and high profits, unless you have a magic super formula to predict things. And basically they said that's exactly what he had. It was just huge profits and just no volatility. His fund was just slowly grinding up nonstop no matter what was going on.
And what stunned me, what stunned me is that there were some investors who knew that there was something fishy going on, but they assumed that he was doing something illegal, but they didn't care. They figured, oh, he must be doing insider trading or something like that, and that's why the financial statements he gives don't add up. But they figured, well, he's found some illegal way to get information or something to make good money, so we don't really care. Since our investment is making money, we're happy. So, you know, they know he's doing something illegal, and they keep their money there, and then they're all of a sudden shocked when it turns out it was a Ponzi scheme.
Well, to be fair, it's only a few of them that suspected that, right?
Yeah, not everybody, but there were some investors who had come to that conclusion.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
So.
it's a whole slippery slope. The Goldman Sachs thing, and we haven't even gone into the allegations yet, but
No.
my general feeling about it is it's like, yes, there are some things they're doing that are pretty underhanded. They may or may not have done things that are illegal. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know if I can answer that. But there is also this other aspect of it which gets me, and this is just because I've done trading and I know a lot of traders. And I know that markets are extremely unpredictable, and a lot of times when people follow someone else's advice and they lose money, they get really angry and they'll want to sue them, for example. And this happens to fund managers all the time. They do all their homework and whatnot, but if it doesn't pan out, people can start suing and say, oh, there are so many things you could come up with saying, claiming. Any kind of, claim that'll convince a jury, I guess,
Of
to
malfeasance.
try to win you the case. So, there is that aspect of it. I feel like, yes, the markets came down quite a bit from 2007, and I think some of this is just because people are pissed that they lost money with their Goldman investments, and so they're suing based on that. And they're saying, well, Goldman knew that these securities were worthless and they sold them anyway. And sometimes it's really hard to show whether or not that was really the case. I mean, these investment banks were tremendously optimistic, and I don't think, they would have gone belly up the way a lot of them did if they had really known that these things were all going to become worthless. So,
Yeah.
there's two sides to the story, so it's kind of tough for me to come out too strongly on either side. And of
Well,
course there is the government involvement too, which is another, and the bailouts,
sure.
which is another story.
Well,
But
it's interesting that the psychological aspects of why people start getting irate at investment firms and why it's always when they lose money and when there's negative things that people get in trouble. I think that's fascinating to me. And I can think of one personal example in my life where when I worked at PC Week Labs back in the 90s doing product reviews where I would test products, technology products, and write stories about them,
yeah.
that I had a reputation for being one of the most negative reviewers. I gave the fewest buy recommendations and the most negative reviews of anyone who was there at the time anyway. And no one got on my case about it, but I like my management was all nobody my, to be clear, none of my management was the management was very supportive. On the other hand, I noticed that the companies who I'd write negative reviews for, I had a much higher frequency of people of companies getting on my case, getting their lawyers involved, calling my editors, complaining about the review, and really making. Tying up, consuming a lot of my time and wasting my own company's money and legal resources because we have to get our lawyers involved. Whereas I had some colleagues, there were other people, some people who I knew who would do reviews but would almost never be negative. And in some cases, I would look at some of the reviews and I'd say, this is inaccurate, what you described here or there. But the reality is, no company is going to stick their lawyers on you for an inaccurate review that was positive.
yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, when people say, well, I invested in Goldman's whatever, whatever fund and it lost money and Goldman should have known better, then I think they're making this incorrect analogy. It's like when someone sues a surgeon who really, let's say it's, a case where the surgeon really did botch something, okay? Let's say they really were irresponsible and they didn't follow the procedures correctly for whatever reason. Okay, in that case, you might have a real argument because it's something that's objective and there's a method of doing it and you can measure it and people go to school and they learn how to do it. You know, markets are not like any of that because nobody has a crystal ball. Nobody has a perfect system. You can't ever really say, well, they should have, I mean, the only way you can say they should have known better, I think, is in risk. Like someone could say, you shouldn't take too much risk might be better advice than saying you should take too much risk. Of course, I guess there's always the argument for being said, well, if you don't take enough risk, you won't beat inflation and then you're also bad. So maybe you can't win. But this whole idea that you know, these investment banks should have known better is just a difficult one. It's a very difficult one for me to swallow because all investment is speculation. And in the end, because it's speculation and because the future is uncertain, it's really up to the investor to make the right decision and do their own research. You know, there's a lot of Pied Pipers leading in all kinds of different ways, and they all can't be right. And
the argument, however, the case against, we'll get into the specifics of the exact legal charges against Goldman in a little later here, but I think the case against Goldman and investment banking, the broader moral case, I would say, not the legal case maybe, but the broader moral case that I've heard is that these companies, they were foisting complex instruments and schemes on unsophisticated people in the public, whether it was government officials like getting counties to buy derivatives or towns that they really didn't understand and take on risks for insuring default swaps. And so on, or even with the bond market, with the auction rate bonds or whatever that they had, that there was no way that investors could have understood the risks of these things, and that these investment banks did know it, and therefore, when the whole thing blew up, it's their responsibility because they shouldn't have been putting the investors in such risky things that there's no way any normal human being could ever have rationally understood the complexity of. And if the investment firms themselves claim that they didn't even understand the risk of it, well, then that would just be further evidence that if they themselves didn't understand it, then clearly they knew that this wasn't so. They should have. They knew this was something they shouldn't have been marketing. I mean, I think that's
right.
Kind of the case that I hear, the moral argument against these companies, and ultimately Goldman Sachs and many of the others of the investment banks that ran into trouble are really they're responsible for leading to the financial crisis and the need for the government to give massive bailouts.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, there's some dubious things that they did. One of the most blatant cases is where Goldman was actually selling these debt obligations, and then, they packaged them and sold them, and then they immediately bought derivatives, betting that those same securities they had sold on good faith would fail. So they profited selling them, and then they profited from the derivatives as well. So I agree with you. They were doing some horrible things. But I wanted to make my other point absolutely clear too about how investing is enormously speculative activity. And a lot of the really crappy investments that a lot of banks had been pushing prior to 2007 had been doing really well beforehand. All these debt obligations that we now know were ridiculous and could have never been repaid were soaring. I mean, investors were snapping them up like crazy and people were getting great returns. So, you know, there was a time where they were looked at as being really, really smart for what they were doing, and no one was complaining and there were no lawsuits, you know, back then. you know, it's only when the only when the bubble bursts or the chain letter, you know, runs out of new people to buy into it, however you want to describe a bubble, that's when people get upset.
Well, and taking your point further, I mean, for many years, some of these instruments and securities had been doing really well. Auction rate bonds had been giving very low interest rates, much lower interest rates than traditional bonds do, than traditional municipal bonds, for a decade or more. And so
they thought they were being responsible. They, you know, they believed in them. That's my point about the speculation. It's very hard for me to come down on the side of saying the bank should have known better, with the exception of the cases that we mentioned, like betting against what you sold. Obviously, they did know better because they were betting against what they sold, and that's pretty sinister. But I think in general, most of the activities in the investment banks, they were not sinister like this. They just really were very optimistic, and they thought they were doing the right thing, and they thought that, you know, everyone and his brother should be owning as much of this paper as they could, on as much leverage as they could.
Well, so getting into the specifics of their current legal troubles, or the SEC charges against Goldman, my understanding is it was similar to what you were just describing of selling something and then shorting it, making money on the negative side on the other hand as well. And if I understand correctly, they would sell some securities to investors, but then they were also – there was a hedge fund that they were working with that actually was owned by Goldman employees that was taking out – that was betting that those same securities would fail and default.
Correct.
And that they were not disclosing this to the people who were buying these mortgage securities in the first place. And so the charge seems to be poor disclosure, not really disclosing the full nature of what's going on, or material information that the investors ought to know.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of suits that are being, are not actually, a lot of them are not as clear as that one is. That one to me is quite clear, but there are actually a lot that are claiming more just, you know, that Goldman should have known better type of suits that are out there. And I think those are going to definitely continue as well. But yeah, the one you mentioned, I think the argument that Goldman is using to defend it is they're saying, well, the people who bought those, that the one bought the securities that Goldman themselves were betting against, they said they were sophisticated investors who basically should have been doing their own homework. That is their argument.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, though, because some of my readings on this as well have seemed to indicate that Goldman was not really you could only get general information on the securities themselves. And this is a chronic problem of the bubble, actually, is that many of these securities that were being sold were so complicated, had so many components in them, that it was hard for anybody to even understand what the heck was going on with them. And that Goldman, in some cases, at least this is really, really loose on my loose understanding of secondhand articles that I'm reading, is that they did not give the depth of information that one might need to fully understand what was in these things, and moreover, that they were giving more details to this hedge fund that was betting against the securities than they were giving to the people who bought the thing. Now, that actually sounds a little more dubious than just whether they were divulging enough information. I mean, if they were actually giving more information to the hedge fund in a more timely fashion as to, like, the performance of the underlying assets in the portfolios, in the securities, and that the hedge fund knew that sooner and in more depth than the actual investors of the securities themselves, that starts to sound a little a little dubious.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's definitely a good point.
But
yeah,
you know, and I don't want to. I was thinking to myself before the show. I was thinking, well, what is my opinion on Goldman? Do I think they're an evil company? Do I think they should be that they should be crucified, and that the management and the brokers and so on should, that they are the enemy of America or mankind? And I certainly don't come on that point. I think I've made it clear in other episodes that we've had, other shows, that I believe that the bubble was an equal opportunity thing. And in fact, not just that, that the bubble wouldn't have existed unless there were lots of people who, when we manias occur because society in general is willing to throw caution to the wind. And Goldman
Absolutely.
Wouldn't have gotten away with the things that they did if there weren't investors, just as we were talking about with Madoff, who were willing to jump off the deep end and do things that in normal circumstances you'd never do. So I believe that there's a lot of guilt to go around. That said, I certainly don't want to infer that Goldman and other investment banks didn't commit some actual malfeasance. So I don't feel I have enough details in these specific charges on these securities that the SEC is bringing against Goldman today to know whether in this particular instance that met a legal threshold for malfeasance or not. I don't know, so I don't think I'm qualified to say, but in general, though, I don't blame Goldman for all of the problems that have occurred, but I also think that they're not. I certainly don't want to defend them either, to say that they were as pure as the driven snow or doing good stuff. No, they were participating in the mania, contributing to it as well, and so they're complicit just along with most of society, and
right.
And I guess the thing I will say is that I think, unfortunately, they are going to be trotted out as cases in point of the abuses of the system, or the economy, and they will get a lot of – it's very convenient and easy for people to blame a large company and organizations that made great profits. It's easy for them to blame that, to put a face on all of the problems that have happened in the economy.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. But really, yeah, the things that bug me are, one, the strangely written laws that are out there, and a lot of that has to do with the amount of pushing that they've been able to do in Washington to get things into their favor, and also their influence on the Treasury Department. And I certainly think that they had an influence in terms of where a lot of the bailout money went. And so for me, that's where I take issue, because once you cross that threshold, then that's where it becomes, in my mind, something that it really is wrong and immoral. I saw this thing, this was actually like a year and a half ago, or maybe, you know, it's a long time ago when the financial crisis just started getting going, and I think Bush was talking about the first bailout package. And I was driving down the highway, and there are these people hanging this big sign that said, "Bankers deserve prison, not our $700 billion." And I was looking at it, and I was like, wow, you know, those people have the anger part of it right, but they totally have the wrong idea. You know, the bankers don't deserve prison, but they also don't deserve the $700 billion. You know, unless they actually did something illegal, then, okay, maybe that's something else. But they certainly didn't – I don't think they deserve the bailout at all, and that, to me, is the part that was their real corruption in the system. You know, it's funny because back when the bailout was passed, and I was talking with someone about it, and we were trying to figure out what the real point of the bailout is, because I was saying there's really no point. What it came down to, and Bernanke's whole theory of why we needed the bailout, was that, well, if these banks are not there to lend money out, then we won't continue growing the economy and growing credit. And of course, I knew the bailout was not going to do what it was intended to do, and that's a philosophical idea, which is not worth really going into now. But I basically said this is not going to work. It turns out, of course, as everyone has noticed, that with all this money, all this bailout money, the banks have not been lending it out. They've just been sitting on it. So Bernanke's theory was wrong, and I think, yeah, I mean, it's been proven to be wrong that they're not lending out that money, so there was really no point in the bailout at all. So I'm thinking they should just take the bailout money back and pay off some of our treasury debt with it.
Just a note to our listeners, we'd love to hear from you. You can call in at area code 917-388-4810.
So, yeah, that basically sums up my feeling. But apart from that sort of stuff, all this stuff about suing them over well, it's one article I'm looking at. They're like scanning through emails at Goldman Sachs trying to see whether or not, you know, they knew different investments were going to perform poorly. And apparently a lot of the emails contradict. Like they'd say some emails where some guy was worried about them and someone else who was confident. So they said it's really not clear at all. And that just goes back to what we were talking about earlier. It's, you know, investing is very speculative, and a lot of these investments, which were revealed to be these ridiculous things later, in an objective light, had performed marvelously in the marketplace and were valued very well for a long time. So, you know, I don't think that side of the coin has a case. But there's definitely multiple sides, I think, to this argument going on here.
Well, as no surprise, I agree with much of what you're saying. I do. You're saying the bailout has been proven to have not been of value, and it hasn't helped because banks still aren't lending. That's questionable. The fact that banks aren't lending a lot, that's true, but there is an argument to be made that had the bailouts not occurred, there would have been an utter collapse of the financial system, and everyone would have lost any savings they had in banks, and the entire economy would have come to an utter collapse.
And so
since that hasn't happened, and in fact we've seen their stock rally, we see companies reporting better earnings. I mean, just today IBM came out with good earnings. Yahoo's had improved earnings. Manufacturing is even showing a slight uptick. So the argument could be made that, yeah, the bailout worked. It was a good thing.
Right, but the bailout, yeah, they've been bailing and bailing and bailing the whole way down, and now that we have a rally, suddenly everyone's saying, ah, it's the bailout bubble. I don't know. Maybe they're right, but my point is they bailed for a long time before we finally started this rally in March of 2009. So, but I do know you're also kind of playing devil advocate. Here, so.
Of course, that's what I do. But
yeah, I definitely am aware of that. But that was the whole thing that Bernanke was talking about. The whole reason for the bailout is so they keep growing credit, keep lending money, keep interest rates low, and keep people borrowing. And the borrowing is just not really happening. And I think that was the whole theory, right? That was the engine that was going to get us out of this whole economic doldrums. And I would also argue the economy hasn't really recovered. I know in the, as much as people say, I mean, I know in the news they're talking about, you know, the Dow is up past 11K and everyone's really enthusiastic. But if you look at the unemployment numbers and a lot of the household surveys they've been doing about, you know, I really would love to read this, to go into this with you real quick, but were you about to say something there?
No, go ahead.
Sure. This is another article I found on businessinsider.com. It says, you know, despite the rally in this past year, in 1 year, here's some stats which are quite surprising. Okay, over the past year, and these are household surveys, have you had someone in the household without a job or looking for work? And that's gone up 5% in 1 year, even though the rally has been, you know, going on. Have you been personally laid off or lost your job? That's gone up another 3%. Have you had your hours reduced or a pay cut? That's gone up 4%. Have you had trouble paying for medical care? Up 3%. You know, trouble with mortgage? Up 4%. Credit cards? Up 1%. Had a loan denied? Up 2%. Or had a job or other financial problems? It's up 11%. So the numbers, yeah, they aren't extremely up, but the point is, with this huge rally we've experienced, we just haven't seen that much of an increase in the economy. I do think earnings are up, yes, but a lot of other factors, and certainly the job situation is just horrendous still.
Well, I also, when we talk about this kind of stuff and talk about bailouts, I'm always thinking of Japan, and Japan has been doing this for decades now of bailing out their financial institutions and providing stimulus to the economy. And in many senses, you could say that it's worked, that they've avoided serious,
what could have been.
Yeah, they've avoided serious crash or major pain.
Okay.
And
I'll tell you this great. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, just to finish the point is that may be the case, but I would argue that having, if Japan had been willing to survive, to live through a major financial shock back in 1990 and seeing half their banks just go bust overnight, that I think that would have been far better than to have this water torture of deflation lasting for 20 years.
Right.
You know, so it's like, what do you prefer? Do you prefer to put yourself in life support indefinitely and keep hollowing out your economy? Or would you rather get the thing over with and done with and clear out the malinvestments and move on? And the path that the U.S. and much of the world seems to be following is this path of avoidance and extend and pretend and keep just delaying the inevitable as long as possible. And, I mean, that could be setting us up for 20 years of terrible financial performance.
Right. Well, yeah, you're absolutely right on that count. But I want to also add that, like I was saying earlier, with all the bailouts that happened long before we ever got to this rally phase, we really have no way of even knowing if that's necessarily true either. I mean, we know very little about economics. I think this has been proven to be the case lately with Bernanke being, you know, he's got a PhD from MIT in economics, and he was incredibly bullish right in 2007, right before the crash. And of course, Paulson, CEO of Goldman Sachs, or ex-CEO, right, he had said this is the best business environment I've ever seen in my life right before the crash. So to a large extent, we have to admit that we can't really say for certain what effects these bailouts have. They might even be negative. You read a lot of Austrian papers, they'll say that bailouts actually hurt the economy and make things worse. So there's all kinds of sides of it. But here's the main thing about the bailout, and Oh, I have to quote The Simpsons here because I saw this. There's this great episode of The Simpsons where Homer is attacked. He's not attacked, but he's frightened by a bear in his front yard. And apparently, this bear had escaped from the zoo. So they take the bear away, and then he's so upset about it, they go to the mayor, and they end up raising taxes so that they can have this new bear patrol. So Homer's outside, and he's looking around, and Lisa's there, and he says, "I don't see a bear in sight. The bear patrol must be working perfectly." So Lisa, being the smart one, comes up to Homer and says, "Dad, I have this magic rock here," and she's trying to make a point, "and this magic rock keeps tigers away." And then Homer says, "Oh, I don't believe that." And then she says, "Well, I don't see any tigers around, do you?" And then, of course, then he says, "Lisa, I would like to buy your rock." So then she just hands him the rock, and he ends up buying it from her. But, she just gives up making her point, right, and just takes the money. But it's a wonderful, wonderful moment of humor because the analogy there is so clear to so many things that we see, and we have this whole correlation and causation, mistake that we're always doing, and that there, correlation does not imply causation. So, yeah,
Absolutely.
that's.
Even the rally today, the rally that we've seen in the economy and in stocks in the last year, there's general agreement that it's due to the financial bailout and the stimulus, and that that is what is fueling the rally. But that could be false as well. That's a whole lot of guessing going on as to what leads that kind of thing to,
Right,
or
right.
what leads the rallies.
Exactly. I mean, look at the 1970s. We had enormous inflation in the 1970s, and that wasn't good for stocks. People might have thought that that's kind of a stimulus, right? That's the whole basis of Keynesian philosophy, that inflation is a stimulator and it creates jobs and it would be good for stocks. And of course, that wasn't true at all. So I don't know. There's a lot of arguments, and I don't mean to say that I know how economics works, because I don't think anybody knows everything about that topic yet. Maybe one day we will, but yeah, that is my point, that we don't know. And so it's really just unbelievable to me that they could come out and claim that they knew this would prevent crisis when they couldn't even see the crisis coming. So it's like, what kind of hubris do you need to be able to make a claim like that? It's really beyond me.
So back to Goldman Sachs, are they going to be able to recover from this, from their current bad PR and charges, or is this the beginning of a greater snowball that's going to, is this the beginning of some larger process that they're going to be facing with that could really shake the very foundations of their firm?
Oh, that's so that's spec that's a speculative thing, right? Because it's just like the markets. But if I had to make a bet, I would say yes. This is the beginning, sort of the tip of the iceberg of a lot of pent-up hatred of Goldman Sachs, I think. And actually, I think the rally is almost contributing to the hatred of Goldman Sachs, because the vast majority of Americans are actually not long stocks right now. Most are in bonds, according to numbers I've been looking at, because they were so, they basically got scared off of stocks during the 08 crash. And so I think they're shifting to bonds because they see them as being more conservative, which I believe will prove to be wrong as interest rates on those things eventually start going up. But we'll see what happens there. So I think that there's this perception that the market is a rigged game. People saw this huge crash and now this monstrous rally, and of course most people lost money in that late first leg down. And now they're perceiving, whether or not this is true, they're perceiving that these investment banks know what's going on, that they know that they made money on the way down and they're making money on the way up, and they know every squiggle of the market, that it's rigged. You can look online. There's millions of articles now. If you just search for Goldman, you'll read articles about how the market's rigged and Goldman runs the market. So there's tons of stuff out there, especially in Rolling Stone magazine. They're talking about this stuff all the time. So, yeah, it's just huge pent-up hatred. But I think the thing that really worries me a bit, though, is that it's not just the tip of the iceberg for Goldman, but the industry in general. So I think anyone who wants to be involved in finance or who wants to run a fund or anything, you know, anything in the field, I think there's just going to be so much blowback. It's going to be quite something. You know, if they open up the spigots and they let people sue on the assumption that Goldman should have known better, and I'm not talking about the ones where they were actually shorting the same things they were selling, but the cases where, you know, Goldman thought they were doing the right thing, but it turned out to be a disaster. You know, if they let those people sue and they win, that kind of a precedent is kind of dangerous, because then it's like, well, if anyone loses money in the market, now you can sue them. And that, trust me, if that type of mentality gets let loose, then that's going to really hurt the financial industry, because no one's going to want to touch anyone else's money or give advice if they're petrified by being wrong. And most of the time, most people are wrong. That's
well,
just the way markets are, with the principle of maximum ruin that we've talked about.
But as we talked about earlier tonight, there's a long history of the cyclic nature of the economy and of investment banks, where there's extended, lengthy, decadal dry spells for these firms. And if I was going to make a prediction about Goldman and the rest of the financial industry, actually going beyond Goldman, it would be this: that their fate is tied to the success of the economy. And if the American and global economy continues to rally and doesn't fall back into recession again in the near future, that they could very well ride through this bad PR and legal issues with relatively unscathed. But if things get worse, and if we go back into a double dip, and the stocks crash and unemployment grows even more, I think that they're in for a world of hurt, and that public opinion will devastate them. And you were saying, oh, that it would be very bad if the precedent is made that people can sue them. Well, what's going to make that precedent will be if people are losing lots of money. And if there's people who are really, really hurting, and investors and so on, then nobody's going to have any sympathy for the investment bankers or financiers, and nothing will save them. And their companies are going to either disappear or go into bankruptcy altogether, or become just shells that waiting for the next phoenix to arise out of the ashes of the economy decades hence.
Here's a interesting question for you. If Goldman, let's say some investors sue Goldman for selling them mortgage-backed securities that failed because they said this is lousy, you should have known better. And then they win. Go back in time and imagine if Goldman had not sold those securities because they said, you know, we're worried these are too dangerous. We're only going to sell treasuries because those are nice and safe. Would those investors have bought the treasuries that Goldman advised, or would they have gone to another investment bank to buy mortgage-backed securities paying a higher interest rate and rallying like mad because interest rates had, you know, were falling across the board? I don't know. It's something I think about.
You're right. I mean, it wouldn't have changed a thing. I mean, yeah, even if Goldman had refused to sell their customers certain types of securities, then somebody else would have, and there were plenty of people doing it in the mania. So is all that would mean is Goldman would have had fewer profits for themselves. The other people would have been getting it. Now, that doesn't give much comfort to anybody who's upset that such things were sold. But the reality is it wouldn't have changed much. And now, someone could argue that this armchair quarterbacking and going and punishing these firms after the fact, that there is value in that because at least it will make sure no one will ever do it in the future. To that, I say poppycock. We went through the history of Goldman Sachs. They had been inured in scandals, back in 1907 with bond issues and stuff. So this stuff comes and it goes. And you give enough time passes, right? 50, 60, 70 years, then the economy is rallying. People put blinders on. They won't care. They'll let them get away with things. And so no matter how much we throttle and punish people today, it isn't going to mean squat 70 years from now. Any of the things that we do now, people, when you start talking 3-4 generations out, people will have forgotten whatever happened, it's irrelevant. So even on that basis of being a deterrent for future activity, I don't buy it.
I definitely think you're right about that.
So, I don't know. Of course, I'm the guy who wrote Michael Milken a fan mail when he was in jail in Dublin in California for his stuff with junk bonds in the 90s. I actually had a voicemail that his lawyer left me saying, "Oh, I really appreciate this, but he's not really getting in touch with anybody at the time." So,
right.
I need to be a little bit clearer. I wasn't a huge fan, but I didn't think that it was that was a great another example of this, right? When the junk bond market went south, there was a lot of people who were mad, right? In the early 90s, and who did and Michael Milken was a lightning rod because he had helped make that whole market possible. And it just really annoyed me how everybody seemed to absolve themselves of responsibility and they go after him. And then they get him for like mail fraud or something, and it wasn't they had to discard most of their charges. It was so weak, their cases against him as well. So,
right.
And I just – that to me is, another example of the witch hunts that go on when there's downturns, And when junk bonds are doing well, nobody cared. And there were a lot of companies that were able to get financing because of the junk bonds that Drexel Burnham had innovated on.
Yeah, and even though my philosophy is basically investor beware because everything's so speculative, it doesn't mean I don't feel bad. I feel pretty very bad for anybody who lost money. I mean, I've read articles of people who put, a couple hundred thousand their life savings into bonds, and then the bonds defaulted, and then they're extremely angry at whatever bank had sold them the securities, but they didn't do their homework on that. At the same time, they were buying junk bonds in a lot of cases. But it may be true that the bank, tried to paint them as being better than they were. I don't really know. But what I really want to say, though, is most people should not be investing at all. The main thing I've been saying is, look, put your money in something safe, like a money market fund, or if you want some extra yield, maybe some really high-quality corporates or munis. But you got to do your homework, make sure they're really high quality and something like that. And I think you'll do pretty well if you just try to stay away from taking a lot of risk in the long run. For the majority of people, that's probably the best thing to do.
And on that note, I'd like to thank you for calling in, Elliot. It's been another great discussion. And I'd like to tell our listeners that they can tune in again next week, same time, 9 p.m. Pacific time on Tuesday for another discussion about the week in finance and economics with the Optimistic Bear and our and guests. And until then, have another great week. Hopefully not doing any investing.
Yeah, thanks. Bye, Michael.
Bye.